Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today's conversation centres on pressure, decision making, and what happens when high performance starts to come at a personal cost. Many professionals operate at a level where responsibility is constant, expectations are high, and the pace rarely slows. From the outside, everything can appear structured and successful, yet internally, there can be a growing sense of strain, fatigue, or disconnection from what truly matters. The challenge is not always about capability, but about clarity, focus, and how individuals manage the demands placed on them without losing themselves in the process. Today's guest brings a grounded and practical perspective to this space. Joe Loney works with corporate executives navigating high levels of pressure, helping them regain focus, strengthen decision making, and address both professional and personal challenges through a more conscious and sustainable approach. Joe, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you, Belinda. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, the pleasure's all ours, honestly. Joe, to begin, can you share a little about your journey and what led you to work with individuals operating under high levels of pressure?
Ultimately, what led me into this work, what I'm doing now, wasn't theory. It was a lived experience. So therefore, my journey through life and finally reaching a point about 6 years ago where I actually had quite a profound spiritual awakening. And ultimately, that whole journey has led me to be, you know, here right now doing what I do and talking to yourself and your listeners.
And can you share a little bit more about that spiritual journey? I mean, that awakening you speak about, what is an awakening for some listeners who wouldn't understand that concept?
Yeah, for me, the spiritual awakening was initially it was a huge, profound change in the way I sort of looked at life and what was going on around me. It was almost a blissful state. My first, on reflection of that, my first encounter with that was when I was about 8 years old. I was actually raised as a Roman Catholic in a traditional Irish family. So religion always played a big part, but I was questioning this for me at 8 or 9 years of age. And then just the journey of life, you know, we all have different experiences and come across different traumas in life, and you know, ultimately the spiritual awakening just woke me up to seeing life in a different way.
Thank you for sharing that and being so vulnerable in sharing that, because it's not a easy thing for a lot of people to share. I think many people hear the term spiritual awakening and imagine something distant or really dramatic, and when often it's actually a deep shift in awareness and how you experience yourself and the world around you. And what's interesting is that you recognized elements of that curiosity and questioning from such a young age. I mean, 8 years old is such a young age.
And yes. I was going to say that moment. I was about. I was between 7 and 9. So I'm going to go. Let's go with 8. And I just remember questioning myself, and it stuck with me all my life. And I sort of very occasionally revisit, but it was a profound moment in my childhood. Obviously, I didn't understand what it was that I was questioning, and you know, ultimately I kind of lived a very conventional life, education and going into different work environments, marriages, etc. And it was then the unraveling of life started happening. And you know, with regard to the awakening, that can be then, and it normally is, followed at some point with what's referred to as dark night of the soul, which is almost like a very, very deep depression. And for me, that that resulted in you know, suicidal ideology. I was also sectioned for a very short period of time, and I literally had hit rock bottom. And it was hitting that rock bottom and kind of starting to understand a bit about what was happening, that life started to make sense. It wasn't overnight. It was you know, a long period there of making sense and rebuilding my life.
Again, thank you for sharing with such honesty as well. It's not easy to talk about these things, and I'm sorry that you had those thoughts as well of suicide. I mean, it's really traumatic to have those thoughts, let alone go through those experiences. And I think what you've described there is something many people quietly go through but struggle to put into words, and that contrast between awakening and then facing such a deep internal unraveling can feel incredibly isolating. Yet for many people, it becomes the very point where they begin to reconnect with themselves in a more honest and meaningful way, and they change their lives. And you are now changing so many others because of your own experiences. Now, Joe, you work closely with executives who carry significant responsibility. What do you tend to notice when they first come to you?
You know, Belinda, many don't actually initially realise that they're under pressure, because stress has become so normal.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a, it's actually a 24 hours, 7 days a week stress. You know, in terms of when people start talking to me about what's going on in life, you know, one of the things is that even trying to sleep becomes difficult. And, you know, in the executive world and at that high level, there's almost an unwritten rule. And people are famous for saying, you know, I can survive on 4 hours sleep or 5 hours sleep. That's a great place to be. But actually, for most, because of the complications that go with that, the you know, they're totally sort of trapped in their mind. So even putting the head on the pillow, it's what's gone on during that day, the day before, and what's coming forward. So those are sort of very obvious indicators as to what's going on. You know, difficulty switching off, mental fatigue. For me, one of the really big ones which contribute to all of the other things that we could list, and that is basically overthinking, constantly thinking. So yeah, that's a huge sign.
Yes, and I think it's that overstimulation as well. People want to keep up with things, they don't want to miss out, they want, especially if they have a business that is based around social media, for instance, it's that constant keeping up with everything that's going on, keeping up with AI. Mm. And really, I think people have to learn to use certain tools to assist them so they're not doing all the overthinking, especially with entrepreneurs. And you know this all too well yourself, because you work with people that are in that kind of field. But
yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of high performers, they don't look overwhelmed. They actually look, appear, and will come across as highly functional.
Yes. And I think that's an important point as well, because I think many people have normalized functioning under constant pressure. And on the exterior, of course, they compose themselves where they look like they're mentally, emotionally, and physically composed. And I think another thing, what you're describing there, especially the inability to switch off, is something so many high performers quietly struggle with. We're both saying the same thing here, but of course their appearance is completely different from what's going on internally.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah.
At what point?
I mean, one other thing I was going to say, you know, and,
yeah, sure.
You know, about sort of behavior is that control can become a coping mechanism. So it almost seems like this is a normal way of life.
Yes. And when you talk about control, at what point does high performance start to shift into something that becomes mentally or emotionally unsustainable?
I would say that performance becomes dangerous when recovery disappears. So, people will, they're aware of the pressures that are going on in life, and the obvious one is normally poor sleep, or maybe irritability might be the next thing that they start noticing. So, the fact that they're noticing maybe one or two of these elements creep into life, it is a great starting point, and then we can open that up into other things that are, not working for them. A loss of meaning sometimes, emotional numbness, and almost, I guess, productivity and achievement replaces well-being, which for me ultimately comes, it's back to, being able to look after yourself and some self-care and almost some self-love as opposed to the performance.
Yes, and that's again a very important point, because that self-care element, I think when you're so busy in life and working and trying to keep up, it's really hard to actually remember yourself, I think. I think people assume someone is coping simply because they still are functioning, but as you said, high performance can actually mask what's happening underneath. And when achievement starts replacing well-being, people can lose connection with themselves without even noticing it until that exhaustion or emotional numbness becomes impossible to ignore. And that's where people usually have a burnout or a breakdown. So
Yeah,
what
that's an interesting topic actually, because I would, with regard to, I'm going to sort of term it as overthinking, Belinda. But in terms of overthinking, that can get to such a high level that actually that then starts appearing in the body in terms of actual physical health ailments. Truly believe that and I suffered I went through that myself as well, is that we almost through that link to our thoughts is that we actually create what we get.
Absolutely. And it's all to do with brain chemistry as well. If you're releasing that cortisol level at such an extent, of course, it's going to impact your physical being. And science has proved this. A lot of people are actually looking into how stress impacts the body and the physiology. And I appreciate you sharing about your own experience there as well, because we can't, I mean, people do often separate mental and physical health when in reality they're deeply linked. Of course they are, because what
I
you're
think
doing.
it's also because it's the conditioned mind that if something feels wrong in the body, we always look for a medical answer, which is the first port of call, which I totally get that. But there is another angle from that. And I'm quite happy to share this as well, is that around my sort of darker period there, back 5, 6 years ago, coming out of that was a long process, but it was a beautiful gradual process, and really life started changing in just the most basic, simple terms. And I was in a wonderful place spiritually, mentally, emotionally, even physically. I'm 58, although go back 2 years, 56. I was diagnosed with cancer in February of 2024, and that gave me a real insight into being in a good place in my head and my understanding of myself. And I approached it from a completely different angle to what I would have done 5 or 10 years ago. You know, I approached it, I spoke to my tumour prior to it being removed and asked it to remove itself from whatever it was attached to. And, you know, it's been an incredible experience. I'm nearly 2 years now at the end of May, and I've been clear since the operation. I still take meditation. I'm actually grateful for the experience.
And it's amazing that you turned your life around like that. And thank you for once again for being so vulnerable and sharing with such honesty, because what really stands out is not just the experience itself, but the way you approached it with that awareness and that self-acceptance and a very different relationship with yourself than you may have had years before. And I think that gratitude you speak about, even through something so challenging, says a lot about the inner shift that had already taken place. So thank you.
Yeah, hugely. And I kind of bring that up, linked to what we were saying there about, you know, our thoughts and what that can, you know, what that ultimately gives us in life. And it was all about, it's not about just being positive and using positive words. It's just coming at it from a different, a totally different perspective.
Absolutely. Thank you so far, Joe, for your valuable insights. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the incredible Joe Loney as we explore pressure, leadership, performance, and what happens when success begins to come at a personal cost. Welcome back, Joe.
Hi, Belinda.
Now, Joe, how much of the pressure people experience is driven by external demands versus internal expectations?
To be honest, I think, you know, often the loudest pressure possibly isn't external, it's internal.
Absolutely, yes.
And, you know, internal pressure is often stronger. It's just becoming aware of that. You know, self-worth is tied to achievement, fear of failure, need for validation, etc. Yes, I think we just become conditioned to it, what's going on as around us externally, and believe there are sort of things we can do that will change, that will make life easier or better. When you know, most of the time the conflict is internal.
Yes, and that's often the case where conflict sadly is internal, and you have to be very much aware of your own thoughts and your feelings to then take action. And I think from the outside, people, as you said, they do focus on the workloads, responsibilities, or external demands. But as you said, the deepest pressure is often coming from within. And when self-worth becomes tied to achievement or validation, people can end up constantly chasing without ever really feeling settled or enough within themselves. So that's why a lot of people do talk about reflecting and forgiving and healing the inner child, so you do feel that you're enough, and knowing that whatever happened to you, that experience is not what is happening to you presently. And
it's happening now,
and you've got to be able to learn from those experiences. But when someone feels overwhelmed and continues to push through, what is usually happening beneath that behavior where they feel they have to keep going, they have to keep fighting through, they have to push through?
I think ultimately that's avoidance.
Yes.
Yeah, people just, we keep moving because stopping, the thought of stopping would almost force them to have to feel it. Yeah. But there's a non-knowing in that as well when you're in that, when you're in that place as well. So it's looking for that that flicker of light that opens a doorway.
Yes. For you, like you shared, that flicker of light was actually hitting rock bottom and then knowing, okay, the only way is up and the only way I'm going to make the change. Would you say that was you pushing through then?
It was a new me. It was me that I found, the true essence of me, to push through that.
And just out of my own curiosity, when someone goes through a spiritual awakening and they push through and they discover who they are, the new version of themselves, does that always come with a purpose?
Yeah, it's almost, I could almost look at it as a way of feeling chosen almost. It's we mentioned gratitude earlier, and a foundational thing for me with the awakening and the foundation in what I do with people that I work with, gratitude is the foundation.
Yeah.
That's the building block. Whatever it is that somebody has arrived with, once there's an understanding there, then gratitude. You speak to so many people, and if you just simply ask a question, truly, what are you grateful for? And most replies are, I'm grateful for everything. But they would then struggle to maybe put three items down of what they truly believe and what they are grateful for. And then the next thing is, for me, with gratitude, is how do we express that? Expressing gratitude is not a one-off, but ultimately the answer to the question about, I am grateful, that's because when you're asked that direct question, I am grateful for certain things, I think it would be most answers. But really, really sort of digging into gratitude is such a powerful foundation.
And from what you described earlier, and you talked about sadly experiencing cancer and the tumour, when you talk about gratitude and you pulling through that journey and through to the other side, would you say that's a part of gratitude, now appreciating life in a different way?
Yes, 100%. 100%. I have been sort of asked, would people hear elements of my journey, and they sort of sometimes wonder whether or not for me, but this is the case for a lot of people when they come to, they're given a terrible diagnosis, that can be life-changing for people in that instance. Mine had come a number of years before, which then for me, I truly believe that made the process of going through that this next part of the journey. And that was it. For me, that's acceptance. It's acceptance of what is coming.
Yes. I think, again, I appreciate all your responses because it's very honest and very sincere, and it's coming from your own personal experiences and really profound, because acceptance is often misunderstood as giving up. And yes, when actually it can be one of the most powerful and grounding things a person can reach. And I always talk about, you know, building that self-awareness and that self-acceptance, and that includes the good, the bad, the ugly aspects of self. And what you're describing is how that inner shift changed the way you moved through one of life's biggest challenges, not from fear, but from a very different place of awareness. And I think for you personally, that awareness came from that spiritual awakening as well.
Absolutely, yeah. All the for me, all the, if you like, the tools and the different pathways from that awakening, you know, and even each day brings something new, a new challenge or a new hurdle, and it's how we deal with that hurdle that's coming along, if it presents itself, you know, because if there's resistance to it, I do love the analogy about worry, and when, you know, people, everybody will say, yes, I worry, you know, and I did it, of course I did, years ago. When did worry ever solve the problem that you were worrying about? So it's a bit, you are going through in your mind something that may never happen.
And this is exactly what anxiety is. It's that fear.
Absolutely.
That fear of uncertainty.
Yes.
And I think it's an important reminder, because so much of human suffering happens in anticipation rather than the reality. And as you said, worry pulls people into living through imagined outcomes over and over and again, often before anything else has ever happened. The way you're describing it brings people back into the present moment. And I think being in the present moment is so important, because it's usually far more clearer and stable than the mind initially tells us. So if you focus on what is happening presently, it helps you to make decisions and better decisions going forward. So decision making is a key part of your work. How does stress affect the way people make choices? Now, obviously, if you've got things like, sadly, as your experiences, but let's just say the overwhelm, the overthinking, and also the maybe somebody's got burnout. If they are clouded with thoughts that are stressful, how can they then make better choices? How does it work? And how do you advise people?
When the mind is overloaded, people stop responding consciously and start reacting. They start reacting automatically.
And I think when they're responding automatically as well, that's a reactive behavior. And it's a powerful observation, because when people are overwhelmed for long enough, they often move into survival mode without even realizing it. And in that state, reactions start replacing reflection, which is why creating space, awareness, and calm becomes so important. Now, why do you think so many...
It's almost about, I was going to say, I mean, as well, you know, with the decision making, it's, you know, it's important, you know, about understanding about sort of pausing. And I probably bring it back again to its identification with what your own mind is telling you at any given moment.
Yes, and thank you for sharing that. But why do you think so many capable individuals begin to lose trust in their own judgment over time?
Why do they lose trust in their own judgment?
Yeah.
So they're almost questioning themselves then as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so I guess the more overwhelmed someone becomes, you're pushing your own inner clarity further away. So it's harder to hear your own inner clarity because you the more overwhelmed you are, you're not probably making that momentary bit of time for we talked about self-care, self-love earlier, or even you've used the word reflection as well. And I said about pause. So the more overwhelmed you are actually pushing the clarity you need further away. So that's a really key point where somebody could actually make you aware of that and point that out. You know, clarity isn't created by more thinking.
So tell me a little bit more about you personally. How did you push through that? I mean, what made you trust your judgment over time?
I think the point that I sort of, my rock bottom, there were two ways to go, and I tried one of them. Thankfully, that was unsuccessful, and it really was, it felt, obviously I was incredibly alone. At the time, actually, I was actually homeless. I'd become homeless. I'd gone through bankruptcy, official bankruptcy. I just, on one particular day, there was an incident, and I just thought, I've got to start making sense of what I think I already know and how I can get out of this. But number one, I've got to want to get out of this situation. So that became the almost a separation from my ego, if you like. So and for me, it was just I just when I could, I bought books and I started looking into. I understood a fair bit about self-help, but I knew there was more to it because of the awakening, and really doorways just started opening up very, very slowly. I started practicing what. Not only that, I could make sense of what I was learning because of my previous experiences and how those had arrived. So it was just, you know, today's today and I'm grateful for today. And I'll be grateful if tomorrow arrives for me. Very, very simple. Some mantras were really good for me, Belinda, actually. I use a lot of mantras.
And that's good to hear. And again, thank you for sharing that so honestly, because I think what really comes through is that rebuilding trust within yourself wasn't one dramatic moment. It was a series of small decisions to keep going and keep learning and keep becoming more aware. And what you said about clarity not coming from more thinking is incredibly powerful, because sometimes people search harder in the very place that's overwhelming them. Yes. So thank you, Joe.
Yeah, and that's sharing. The push it away. Yeah, yeah.
So thank you, Joe, for sharing once again. We're going to take another short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and we're continuing this conversation with the amazing Joe Loney. Welcome back, Joe.
Hi, Belinda.
When someone begins to regain clarity, what changes do you tend to see in how they operate day to day? I mean, do you have your own personal experience of this?
Yes, I do. I mean, probably a great deal of experiences myself. I think ultimately, in terms of clarity, when somebody's living with great clarity and doing what they need to do, I think ultimately it will come across as calmness. And calmness, without doubt, is mastery. And whatever situation presents itself, that initial reaction and with calmness, and I know we talked about this earlier in one of the earlier questions, so with that clarity comes calmness, which ultimately comes with better thinking, which will give you better decision makings. And for me, one of the in the work that I'm doing with different people is that I always understood what empathy was. I didn't realize until actually, it was about 5 years ago, somebody said to me this. They actually called me a raving empath. So I had to go away and Google that. And ultimately, understanding what empathy is, for me, that made so much sense into so many, or so much sense of so many things that had gone on in my life. So I used to, not a question of why me, it's like, that was strange. So often people would, I don't know them, and they would open up to me and tell me their life story within a minute of meeting them, be that in a shop or, you know, in a social arena. So with empathy, and that's a sensing, it's also a feeling, and that becomes incredibly powerful and helpful in understanding what somebody is going through who might be sat in front of me.
And I think also when you tune into that empathetic self, you are able to make decisions from a place of trust as well, and because you're calm, aren't you? You're listening to that intuition, and that in itself gives a deep level of clarity and self-awareness. And what you shared about empathy also explains why some people naturally create a sense of safety for others. People feel when they're truly being sensed, heard, and understood, and that can be incredibly powerful in helping someone open up. And I think it's a great leadership skill to have as well.
And that's also regulating that person's, so that safety somebody feels, ultimately you are regulating their nervous system.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And finally, Joe, if there is one practical shift someone could make this week to feel more focused and in control, what would you suggest?
It's really, it's quite tough to narrow it. Which one would I pick? I think I would say if you can just give yourself 3 minutes or 5 minutes, be it first thing in the morning, or at any point during the day, just to sit with yourself and focus on breathing. And from practicing that, we would then develop into, I'm adding something there, Belinda, I would, for me, it's talking about awareness and understanding our own awareness.
Yes. So being consciously aware of self is, and breathing is a way to ground yourself. It is a way of being very mindful, and it's a powerful reminder because people often think they need to completely change their life overnight, when sometimes the biggest shift starts with simply slowing down for a few moments and reconnecting with themselves through breathing exercises.
It's the one thing that we all need to be here, and yet we never think about it.
Yeah.
It's quite ironic, isn't it, that this,
yeah,
this one thing we need to survive, it's a lovely process to just focus on your breath, even if it's for 30 seconds. It's just taking time and creating some space.
And that awareness.
It needs practice, of course, yeah.
And that awareness you spoke about, that space for awareness, I think people can move through life entirely on autopilot, but pausing and being consciously aware of the simplest things in life can really change everything. Thank you for such a beautiful way to end the show. So Joe, thank you for such a thoughtful and grounded conversation. Your insight into pressure, leadership, and the hidden cost of high performance has been incredibly valuable. I know many listeners will see parts of themselves reflected in today's discussion. So if our listeners wanted to connect with you, Joe, where can they find you?
First of all, I'm really grateful to be here and doing this with you, Belinda. It's been a great experience. If anything resonates with anybody that's listening, I have a website, which is joeloney.uk, and they can make contact through there. I'd love to hear from people. I've also got social media presence as well. But I think, firstly, I truly hope it's resonated. And just grateful for the experience.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for joining us. And thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, please do share it with someone who may benefit from hearing it. To close today's episode, I've chosen Run by Snow Patrol, a reflective and emotionally grounding song about pressure, support, and finding steadiness. A fitting close to today's conversation. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.